Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that bemoans as much as anyone the news that seems to haunt America. I'm talking about the violence that, according to CNN, has included some 50 shootings across the country since March 16th. Reports such as that force us to take a tougher look at a film industry that portrays violence with about as much concern as an NRA publicist. Nobody, which stars the comedy veteran Bob Odenkirk, is this week's study in violence. After dispensing with that film, the three of us will take a look at the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival, which we all enjoyed experiencing from the comfort of our own homes. Let's begin this week's show, though, by discussing a film written by the same guy who dreamed up the John Wick series. That guy was screenwriter Derek Kolstad. And Kolstad's just-released project is Nobody, a film directed by Ilya Naishuller and starring comic writer, director, actor Bob Odenkirk. If you're familiar with John Wick, you'll recognize the plot of Nobody, though there are some minor differences. Odenkirk plays Hutch Mansell, a guy living an ordinary life with a wife, played by Connie Nielsen, and two kids whose humdrum existence is shattered when a couple of gun-wielding thieves invade his home. This sets in motion a series of events that causes Hutch to revert to a former self, one that, we discover, not only is capable of taking on a gang of Russian mobsters, but actually looks forward to doing so. Not nearly as clever or as original as Naishuller and Kolstad think, Nobody is worth watching mainly for the pleasure of seeing Odenkirk, who began changing his screen presence with the AMC series Breaking Bad, again playing against type. That is, unless you derive pleasure from watching orgies of violence played for yucks that feel cheaper than your average dollar store kitty cat bracelet.
Yeah, I didn't know that this was from the same guy that made up John Wick until after I saw it. And this movie, Nobody, has kind of already developed something of a cult following. I've been reading reviews online that are just in love with this film and just find it this, you know, breathless, exciting burst of action. And I don't think it's quite as original or novel as its most vocal proponents have made it sound. And mainly because we've already had John Wick. And this is basically the same as the first John Wick movie, but replace a retired assassin with a different kind of retired killer. And instead of having him played by an action movie stalwart, you bring in Saul Goodman from Breaking Bad. I mean, that's the real novelty here, is Bob Odenkirk as an action hero. And I think the movie only gets so much mileage out of that joke. And by about halfway through, I kind of got it. I got the point. And I got what it was trying to say about wounded masculinity and about what masculinity looks like in our very heteronormative patriarchal culture. I think it takes swipes at some commentary, but it doesn't really say all that much. I think what does work about this movie, though, is it's almost fanatical embracing of terseness. I mean, this movie has even less of a plot than the original John Wick did. And in fact, the lack of backstory is, it feels almost like, again, like commentary in a way. It's as if it's saying you can make a compelling action narrative without having an elaborate backstory, which the John Wick series, as it's gone on, has created this almost Byzantine kind of world of assassins and Russian mobsters and ballerinas and all this stuff. And I've never found that as interesting as, you know, just the pure action set pieces in those movies. And so in this one, you have Bob Odenkirk basically explaining who he is to the guys that he's just mowed down, but then they die before he can finish it. And so we don't find out either. And I think that's the best joke that this movie has, is that it keeps trying to explain his pathology and explain where he came from. And it really doesn't matter. So I think that's fun. Early on in this movie, there's an action scene set on a city bus that is spectacular. And I think it's the best thing that this movie has to offer. But after that, I don't know. I just kind of felt like I'd seen this before, not just from the John Wick movies, but from, you know, the idea of, oh, isn't it funny to watch old people be action stars? I feel like we've seen that in other things, like the Red movies did that too. I mean, I would probably rather see a Nobody 2 than a Red what are they on, three now at this point? That, you know, four, that had, I think, yeah. Something like that. I mean, that had, you know, Helen Mirren and Bruce Willis.
Or
the Expendables movies. I mean, that's kind of, it's doing a similar thing. Again, I think this is better and it's slicker and has a more clear point of view. But yeah, I mean, it's what, 80, 85 minutes long. It rushes by. It has some fun set pieces in it. But I do think that if you want a better version of this, I mean, the John Wick movies are sitting right there. And I think particularly the last John Wick movie, number three, the first 45 minutes of that movie, the action in that is just, is so good and better than anything that you see in Nobody.
I agree with you, Nathan. Although it's intriguing to me that you appreciated the sort of terseness and the lack of a backstory, and you almost made that into an intentional framing device on the part of the director, which could be true. I can't dispute that because I just don't know. But that to me, of course, was frustrating. I mean, we never find out, for example, it was not clear to me whether his wife had any idea of what he had done previously, because at various points, I felt as though she did have an awareness of, you know, his previous life as a quote auditor. And I thought that was actually one of the funniest jokes, because of course these assassins are referred to as auditors, and that's not the sort of typical professional credentials that you would need to be an auditor in the financial sense. So that was a little bit confusing to me, because I wanted, of course, more backstory. I wanted more context, but just listening to you explain sort of, that wasn't the point. That wasn't the purpose of it.
That's the joke. The joke is that you never find out.
So I didn't really view it from that perspective. The other thing, I mean, you mentioned John Wick because that's the obvious precursor to all of this for a variety of reasons. But, you know, there are so many things, like you mentioned the older assassin joke, and then there's the rescue of the kitty cat bracelet, which was sort of reminiscent of Nicolas Cage, you know, put really, the bunny in the box.
Yeah, and really, which is a throwaway, because,
right,
you know.
Right, right. So there, I mean, if you go in knowing what to expect, you will not be disappointed, because there is enough action to satisfy the action aficionados. But at the same time, for those who might like their action a little bit more richly layered, because there is this father, son, sibling stuff going on that, you know, we never really get into. And there's also his half brother, an American. We don't really know much about that particular relationship and so forth.
Plus his father, played by Christopher Lloyd.
Right, right. Is obviously former FBI or CIA or one of those FBI, alphabet organizations, right. As as our hero refers to it. Even his name, I think, is sort of amusing to me, because Hutch, I mean, again, that sounds so innocuous and it's so at odds with, you know, who he is and what he wants to be.
We need to point out a couple of things that Nyshuler does relatively well. I mean, at the very beginning, there's all these quick cuts that go Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, that shows the humdrum life of this guy, Hutch, consistently missing the garbage collector. You know, that's kind of cute. And then there's the too obvious musical score with songs like I Gotta Be Me, you know, and
You'll Never Walk Alone.
Yeah, exactly. All these other ones.
Old crooner stuff.
Right, that underscore what's going on. A little too obvious. But the thing that I think that is really problematic with this film, and I don't ever really like to approach politics too much, but as you know, my old film teacher used to say, everything is a political statement. The film Nobody is an orgy of violence, particularly gun violence. And in today's world, I think we got to be a little careful about this. Either a movie goes like this, which is basically, let's just do it and not make any commentary at all. Or at least in the John Wick movies, Wick was seen as a lost soul. I mean, and he tries to get away from violence. He can't get away from violence. And he knows that he's damned forever because of it. So it doesn't make a huge commentary, but it makes some commentary, which I think nobody does not.
Well, and Nathan, I haven't read the commentary about people who are enthralled by this movie. And so what's the sort of, is this the coming out of the pandemic, wanting to get back into the real world where people aren't wearing masks? Is it focused on the violence? Is it focused on the manly men hidden within, you know, these accountants who work for family businesses? I mean, maybe fill us in a little bit more on that.
I think that the enthusiasm for this movie, this almost cultish enthusiasm that has developed around Nobody, I think a lot of it has to do with Bob Odenkirk and just kind of the very notion of casting him as an action hero, which seems so improbable for so many reasons. I mean, this is a guy that started in sketch comedy on Mr. Show. And as you
this
said-
This is why I wanted to see the movie to begin with. Yeah.
Of course, it's a great gimmick. It's a great hook. And I also think that people are just responding to the sheer athleticism of the violence. I mean, it ends with this insane, it's like a shootout / Home Alone booby trap situation in a warehouse.
Kind of like the Equalizer movie
exactly.
with Denzel Washington. Yeah.
And see, that's the thing is I just keep thinking of other movies this reminded me of. So I don't think this is as new and clever as it thinks it is, but it has some good sequences in it. And again, like I said, it's only about 85 minutes long. So you're not going to waste an entire afternoon on this if it doesn't work for you.
Yeah, and it doesn't work for all of us. That was Nobody. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at the offerings of the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
Hi, this is Lulu Garcia-Navarro of Weekend Edition. Keeping apprised of the latest news is important, but we all need a break from the headlines. Whether it's a few precious minutes lost in a song, a hearty laugh at a conversation between comedians, or one of those driveway moments when a captivating story transports you somewhere far away, NPR and Spokane Public Radio are here for you. That's a public service you can count on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And we count on you too. Contributing to this station keeps the programs you love on the air. Visit SpokanePublicRadio.org and click the red donate button to show your support today. And thank you.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the study in serial comic violence titled Nobody. Let's now move to what the three of us saw during the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival. First, let's point out that SIFF, as it's known, has been going on regularly since 1976. This year, though, for obvious reasons, it was a little different. For the first time, the festival went virtual. Anyone who had internet access and a credit card could see pretty much whatever they wanted, and that included a total of 219 films, including 93 features from 69 countries and 126 shorts. Mary Pat and I managed to see only two films, both documentaries. But Nathan, you saw a lot more, didn't you?
Yeah, I saw about a dozen. So I don't know if that's a lot more. And that's certainly less than I normally see when I actually go to SIFF, because when I'm there in person, I want to make the most of it. And I just cram my days full with as many movies as possible.
I think our record per day might be five, or maybe we snuck in a sixer at one point.
Maybe once.
It's tough to do. And sometimes it's impossible to see more than four or five in a day, just depending on, you know, which venue you're at. So, I mean, a dozen is pretty good. And what with the virtual on-demand platform that they're using, you can kind of pick and choose and come and go, which is something I really like. And again, this is the third virtual festival I've gone to this year. And I think for at least this was the case with South by Southwest this year, the documentary collection of the Seattle International Film Festival, I think was stronger than the narratives this year. And so why don't we start there? Because I know you guys watched some documentaries. I'll start with one that I saw and that people will be able to see now, which is called Street Gang, How We Got to Sesame Street. And the title kind of sums it up. I mean, this is a look back at the creation of Sesame Street. In particular, it focuses on the network heads at the public broadcasting system. It looks at the original directors and writers and composers, and even the original cast of Sesame Street, and talks about how it came to be, how it was developed, what it looked like when, you know, they were in the pilot testing phase versus what it looked like when it actually made it to TV screens. And I think the thing that I didn't really know about the show was that it was originally designed specifically for inner city audiences and non-white audiences. And so that's why the cast is as diverse as it is. That's why Sesame Street itself looks like, you know, a neighborhood in Harlem. And that was an element that I thought was really well handled in this documentary. And of course you get, you know, interviews with all of the people that are still alive that were involved in the show. And they even talk about some of the music that came out of the show. So I liked this a lot. It's kind of one of those movies that I can't imagine someone, you'd have to have a heart of stone basically to hate this movie. I mean, it's about the Muppets. Pat wouldn't like it.
Well, and also I think the whole notion, I mean, we're going to talk about another documentary where we have these superstars appear on the show, and I still think of some of the performances of individuals who we know as singers, as actors, as politicians who show up on Sesame Street, and that's always exciting and fun too.
Yeah, and so this movie, Street Gang, it's supposed to be available on HBO as of this weekend, and then it's set to open at the Magic Lantern on April 30th, I believe, so next weekend. So you'll be able to see it in a couple of different places if you missed it at any of the film festivals where it's been playing.
Yeah, and one of the things both of you have commented on is the people who played in Sesame Street. What's interesting is another one of the documentaries features a woman who was on the Sesame Street counterpart, The Electric Company, which starred Morgan Freeman and who, Mary Pat?
Rita Moreno.
Exactly.
And I thought that the Rita Moreno doc was excellent because it not only told us about her, it also told us about things that were happening to celebrities in the Hollywood scene, some of which we knew about, of course, the so-called casting couch Me Too situation or circumstance involving young women in particular who were tied to the studio system and so forth. But it also talked about Rita Moreno's being typecast repeatedly as the other in nearly every context. So of course she was from Puerto Rico, and it would make sense, of course, to cast her in those roles. But I mean, she played in The King and I, where she was supposed to be from Thailand. She played in Westerns, where she was supposed to be Native American. And her discussion and the way in which that was presented, I mean, we knew some of these things, but it was presented really in such a way that you began to appreciate more fully what she went through individually and what was happening sort of across the board. And so many people will recognize Rita Moreno, of course, from West Side Story. And I also appreciated the fact that the film looked at West Side Story as sort of a valorization of the immigrant experience. And at the same time, its portrayals were criticized because of the way that it chose to address this and remake this Romeo and Juliet story. So the thing that maybe I liked best about this documentary, apart from the fact that she was very entertaining and very forthright, at one point she comes out and says, you know, my marriage really wasn't that good. And that was sort of refreshing, I guess. I liked the fact that it touched on a variety of different themes. Didn't dwell on them necessarily, but raised them and looked at them more directly than sometimes we see in documentaries such as this.
Yeah, and one of the things I really actually liked about it, something I didn't know, was that after she won the Academy Award for West Side Story, she didn't work in films for 7 long years because they kept offering her the same kinds of roles that she'd had before and she turned them down. That's when she went to Broadway and she ended up winning the EGOT, the Emmy, the Grammy, the Oscar, and the Tony. I mean, you know, one of the few people
who's, and she won the Emmy for, I think, Sesame Street, right? Yeah. Not The Electric Company?
Yeah, no, you're right. No, it was The Muppet Show. It was The Muppet Show.
That's right.
Yeah, The Muppet Show.
Okay.
Say that documentary, which is called Rita Moreno, Just a Girl That Decided to Go For It, I believe that is going to start becoming available in June, and I believe it's getting a theatrical release. So look out for that. I'm sure it will show up on Netflix or Hulu in the coming months as well.
Right. And another film that is going to be coming out is Amy Tan. And what is the full title of that one?
It's called Amy Tan, Unintended Memoir.
That's right. Exactly. And so that one will be coming out sometime soon also. Of the three documentaries that we watched, only two of which were part of SIFF. The third one was a dynamite one about Tina Turner. Mm-hmm. I think I like the Amy Tan one probably the least. It was directed by James Redford, and I think the movie needed one more good edit to absolutely finalize and concentrate to focus the film, because I think it was a little bit all over the place. But if anything you ever want to know about Amy Tan, about her experience growing up, the problems she had with her parents, the problems she had with her mother, how that all affected her writing, how she has devised her books. I think that the Amy Tan movie is a good primer about what constitutes a writer and how they do their work.
Well, and we've talked on the show before, especially the two of you who are professional writers, how difficult it is to show the sort of hidden life and experiences of someone who writes, because it's basically a solitary pursuit. Although I give her a lot of credit, because she says that she was, you know, shy. She wasn't really interested in doing, you know, sort of these book tours, which is essential these days. But you always see her interacting with her readers, you know, in this very upbeat, positive way. And then, of course, Dan didn't appreciate this part of the film, but it also shows the band, the Rock Bottom Remainders, and you know, this group of authors who play in this rock band. And I like that, because that allowed her to adopt this completely different persona. So there's much to like about this. I agree, Dan, it's maybe not at the top of my list of docs. So do you have a suggestion for one more doc that you loved, Nathan?
I'm going to throw out my favorite movie of the festival, which was a narrative film, actually. And it's an Iranian epic called There Is No Evil. And I think we should maybe do a full review on the show when it becomes commercially available. It's supposed to be released next month by Kino Lorber. An incredible movie. It's about 2.5 hours long, and it looks at Iran's capital punishment system through four kind of vaguely interconnected chapters. So put that on your 2C list, and maybe we'll come around to that when it comes out again.
So we need to point out that the SIFF was over on the 18th, but you can still go on SIFF.net and you can't view them, but you'll be able to check them out and to put them on your own calendar for when they become available. At any rate, that was our look at the virtual version of the 2021 Seattle International Film Festival. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed the feature film Nobody. Let's thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, reflect a bit on these words from the one and only Quentin Tarantino. Violence in real life is terrible. Violence in movies can be cool. It's just another color to work with. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.